Okay, hello everyone. So, so this will be a discussion. So I'll, you know, hopefully we can actually keep it like a discussion. So I'll be, we're talking about something about black holes and electron stars. So the black holes part will be led by me mostly, and the electron stars part led by Diego mostly. So let me now just explain what the idea is, what the philosophy of what we're trying to do. So the main idea, okay, is like everything many things have been discussed here, is to describe a finite density state using holography. And we like to do this at really zero temperature. So really at the ground state. We're really looking to see what the ground state of these systems could be. Okay, so just to put some equations on the board. You want to imagine actions that are like this, that have they have the gravity vector. And because we're talking about a finite charge density, some U1 charge, there should be a gauge field as well. Okay? And we will add other things to this as we need to. Okay? So what happens now if you're going to describe a finite density state? Well, we know that in holography, if you have a CFT or some field theory dual to some geometry, if the density is non-zero, that means there's an electric field in the bulk. Okay? The boundary value of the radial electric field is just the charge density. So the question really is, in all these things, the question really is, what is happening inside? Okay? Something has to create this electric field in the interior of the geometry. And what that something is the difference between all of the things that we'll be discussing. Okay? So what happens inside? That is the question. So I want to say that there are really two basic ways to store the charge inside. Okay? There's two basic ways. So one of them is in some kind of a horizon. Okay. So what you should imagine is that there is some sort of a horizon here, and there's charge behind the horizon. And that charge sources the electric field that goes out. So I'll be discussing a bunch of different things. I'm going to maybe make a list of things that I find good and bad about all of them. And everyone should please chime in and say if you agree with me or disagree with me or all these things. Okay? So let's think about the simplest way to do this. So take a horizon, okay? And now let's look at what's happening near the horizon. The electric field is coming out from the horizon. But now we know there's a Gauss's law in electromagnetism, which says that the flux through the surface, the area, must be constant as I move along the geometry. Okay? This is constant. But it's not zero here at the boundary, because we have a charge density. It's not zero here at the horizon. But what that actually means is that if the electric field is non-singular, this area cannot drop to zero. But that means the transverse directions cannot shrink in this simplest setup. Now, if you look at the gravitational equations of motion, what that means is that the spatial slices, so this is the spatial slices, b minus 1, the geometry must factor into a set of spatial slices, and then the remaining equations of motion actually force you to have an ADS2 here. So in the simplest case, this is what you get. You get an ADS2 cross R. Let me just specialize to ADS2 cross R2, so I can stop saying B minus 1. And this is the geometry you get in the simplest case. This is the extremal Risen-Nordström charge black hole.
Sorry, why couldn't you just have E diverging as A goes to 0?
So that seems somewhat singular. So we'll be I'm talking about things that seem somewhat like that soon. Like, but that seems a little bit singular to me. Like, what do people think? Is that?
Well, it's also very unstable, right? Create particles.
Sure, but presumably all these things are actually unstable.
Yeah. So, but that's a good point. Okay, so that's one option. So I can have this diverge. So there's a slightly more, I guess, regular way of achieving a similar effect that I'll talk about soon. But now let's talk about what I find good and bad about these various things. Okay. So what's good about this is that it uses very, very few ingredients. Okay. The simplest thing you can imagine. All right. It doesn't require any peculiar couplings. It really seems somewhat generic, and this is, in some sense, it seems very simple. Okay. You might be tempted to call it universal. Okay. Because it appears to seem to apply to a great number of systems. It uses very minimal ingredients. Okay. But now, what's bad about this? Well, one obvious thing is that because this R2 is not shrunk to zero, this horizon, even at zero temperature, has an entropy that's given by the size of the R2. Okay. So S T equals to zero is not zero.
Why is that bad? I find it good.
Good. Okay. So now, is this bad or good? Now we can discuss this. Okay. Is this bad or good? So so one thing is, this might make you think that this is probably not really the ground state. Okay. We're really not. You haven't found the true ground state of the system. So you can find that good or bad. But if you really care about the ground state, this probably is not it. Because there's many, many states here. Okay. So how do other people feel about this? Good, bad.
The highly degenerate ground state, so you think that's not generic, right?
Yeah, I find it good, right? Because it's basically saying that when I am at the final temperature, I can have it. But I go to zero temperature, it's a source of many stable states, right? Which is very interesting. It's quantum frustration.
Are there kinetic systems which have this?
But that's high TC, right? In ITC, we have all these competing phases in the superjet regime that was confused in the comments by the community a lot. And when you think that the normal state that metal is like ABS2, it makes certainly a lot of sense.
But the difference is that this is entropy density, not
an
entropy.
Right, so well before this started in the string theory community, there was like this experimental character Andy McKenzie that was arguing you have these bad metals in high TC and elsewhere, and they are so interesting because they are versatile construction material sites. You can make many, many, many different ground states out of it. Right? It's very hard to imagine when you have the conventional thermolysis and so forth of quantum static physics.
You want to say this is a sign of many competing phases.
Yeah.
But don't they actually measure as that goes like T log T or something, not like this?
And I would say in condensed matter physics, these bad metals are the real mysterious things. Could it be that ABS2 is associated with these bad metals?
For a given Hamiltonian, in any strongly going system, ground state entropy per unit particles should be fine. I can't prove it, but that's almost the theorem. For a generic many-body Hamiltonian,
yes.
Ground state entropy per unit particle. I mean, the entropy at zero temperature per unit particle per unit volume.
Per unit volume, yes.
It should be in species. Yeah, I'm taking finite number of species.
Yeah, it's not finite here.
Yes, yeah, I agree. But I'm saying for a generic condensed matter system where number of species is finite, the ground state entropy, even if there is all kind of frustration, unless you have a classical system.
I'm missing the last word. The ground state entropy should be non-zero.
Should be finite.
Should be finite
and
not zero.
Should be okay.
But I mean, per unit volume.
Should be zero.
Could be zero. You think it could be zero? Good. Okay. So this is a good point. You really expect that the real ground state, or whatever is classified by this, well, this theorem is applying to, almost certainly has, I think, a unique ground state. That's right. So no one.
But Nernst theorem is not a theorem. It's a mathematics thing.
Yeah, it's a mathematics thing. Exactly.
You can take a triangular icing model, and when it would state triangular icing model down to zero temperature, it would behave like this. Right? And then Nernst came in the 19th century and said, no, that is infinitely unstable, and you always find a way out to single out a particular ground state out of the frustration manifold.
No, I agree from your point. This could be a signature of Anthony's computing, but for a generic Hamiltonian, it will somehow lift in some way, but we don't know
right.
In this case how it will happen.
Okay, so maybe the point is that this is probably not the ground state, but it might well describe some interesting physics above that ground state. So this is also the point of view I like, so I'm glad that people have, you know, mentioned this. But so is this, maybe this is good, maybe. but it's probably not the ground state.
Yep.
That we can, I think, all agree on. Okay? And in fact, in the rest of this, we will see ways in which this is not the ground state. We'll see ways in which this entropy actually more or less directly causes instabilities. Okay?
I have a naive question here.
Yes.
So who is it without, based on this formula even? So is that a large N result, or?
This is a classical gravity result. So yeah, you can think of it as large N result.
Large N, so yeah. Expansion where the leap to the, I mean, will
yeah, I think so. I personally believe that in almost all examples that I know. I'll show you an example where finite N does lift this, in a little bit. Sure. It lifts the ground. Good. Okay. So there's this. Okay, so this is the original Nordstrom black hole. Here, black hole. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now there's a slightly different way that I could create the same idea, having a flux from here. So this is related to something that Shamit said, and in fact the papers doing this are by Shamit and collaborators. You could imagine modifying this action in a certain way. You could imagine, for example, putting a dilatronic coupling here. Okay, so this phi now is a dynamical field that can depend on radius. And so now the Gauss's law has something like this here. And now you can, if this changes with radius, you can set things up so that the spatial slices can shrink, yet there's still a finite flux coming from behind the horizon. Okay? So what you then find, something a little bit different, you end up getting a Lipschitz geometry in the infrared. Okay, with some finite z that depends on parameters in the action. And you can see that to achieve that, the spatial slices are shrinking, and so this guy must be running away. Okay? So now let me talk about some things that are good or bad about this thing. Okay? So something that you can call good if you're looking for the true ground state, okay, is that the entropy of this is now zero. And so this might be a stable ground state, maybe. Okay? But something that makes you maybe doubt that is that the dilaton is running. Okay, phi is running away. And since it's running, this isn't really a scale-invariant solution in the same way that ADS2 was, because it changes with radius. And you can worry that when you get into the deep interior, maybe higher derivative corrections will start to play a role and probably change things. Okay? So, and Shamit is nodding, so do you have any... I see.
Sarah here is in the process of proving that one generic outcome is you get back to ADS2.
Get back to ADS2. Okay, very good. So this was, I think, mentioned earlier. It seems likely that maybe...
Did you say why? Roughly, when you have these black holes and black brains in supergravity theories, you can think of an attractor mechanism for the scalars. These solutions where you get Lipschitz with a running scalar are solutions where the attractor potential only has one minimum where the scalar runs off to infinity. Any higher derivative correction that scales in any way with the dilaton adds enough structure to the potential to give minima in the attractor potential. And near a minimum, phi is constant, and you'll get back to the right neurons from
there. Good. So that seems nice. So what's likely happening is that in the extreme IR, you're getting maybe back to this, okay? Which brings us back to the same problem, okay?
So this state is, even though the first state is unstable.
Yes. That's right.
This is even more unstable.
This seems even more unstable. That's right. This seems, I think I think classical higher derivative corrections will take us back to ADS2. Is that right?
So I think what you end up with is a long regime where it has one kind of scaling behavior, and then you get back to ADS2 in a very different form.
Okay. So this.
The R2 is much smaller than it would have been.
It's much smaller than it would have been. Yeah. So there's less extensive entropy, but there's still extensive entropy.
Okay. Okay. Good.
The coefficient is no longer. Is the coefficient still n squared, or is it where 1?
It should be down by power of n, I think.
One power of n?
Yeah.
Just one power of n?
Oh. Maybe two.
Okay.
The coefficient of what? The entropy?
Yeah. The entropy density.
So you're attracted back to ADS2, but not the same solution?
A smaller ADS2. A much smaller ADS2.
Okay, great. So it seems almost as like there's something special about ADS2 that if you want to have your electric field coming from behind the horizon, it seems like ADS2 really seems like it's coming out from this. So one thing that I find very interesting about this is that it's almost saying that if you want your charge to come from behind the horizon, okay, then you need to have a finite entropy density. That's one way to interpret this thing, maybe. Sorry?
I think Sen might have more or less proven that.
More or less proven that in this? Okay, okay.
He didn't prove it for brains yet, though. I think strictly we know it's not the same for brains. They're supersymmetric solutions with different horizons. They're supersymmetric Schrodinger and
people have been making engaged
super.
People have written down Lipschitz black holes.
Yes.
They're not that don't involve running dilatons.
That's, that's right, but they don't work at zero temperature, correct? They, I mean, they don't have a charge at zero.
Because they're not null singularity at the horizon. Yeah.
So that's good. That's another thing that maybe I should mention. So Lipschitz spacetimes also have this peculiar property that the tidal forces as you cross, as you go deep into the interior, become very big. Okay, so I don't know if this is necessarily something that's very bad or not, but there are big tidal forces in the interior.
Yeah, these tidal forces are probably like some. So most of the, if you try to embed them in string theory, most of these Lipschitz construction need an extra dimension, and probably these large tidal forces correspond to reducing along the direction which has a coordinate singularity, which is not bad. So from the higher dimensional point of view, these are just an indication that there are coordinate singularities. But in the lower dimensional thing, it looks like they are weird things.
I see. So maybe these are not bad. These are perhaps not bad, that in a proper string theoretical embedding, maybe they're not so bad. Probably. They just look bad from this effective action point of view. Though. Maybe these aren't bad. It'd be very nice to see if there's some way to make. I guess you're saying that every time I can uplift it, it's okay. So I guess I'd be interested in seeing if there's any signature just in the.
At least for the z equals 2 case, you know, just like the solution, like the string embedding, say that it's not pretty much like AES written like one coordinates with some finite size for the circle. So the tidal forces correspond to the fact that the circle actually becomes null as you go asymptotically, but they have finite size in the infrared. So I don't think it's bad, but you're reducing along this null direction, which is like a coordinate singularity from the high dimensional point of view.
I see.
Are you saying you can regulate by small temperature? Small temperature. That's what you're saying.
No. I think this is very different statement. You're saying even at zero temperature, the higher dimensional solution.
Even at zero temperature, you can uplift it to a regular solution. And from the lower dimensional point of view,
the artifact, well, it's a result of the dimensional reduction.
Right.
So the higher dimensional solution has a null circle?
So asymptotically, the circle becomes null, but they have finite size in the infrared.
What is the
aspect?
Is this like rolling scaling then?
Usually,
an example of the rolling scaling?
No, so the examples I'm talking about is like. Pure that Lipschitz theory with no rolling scale.
So there's some circles varying over the Lipschitz over the radial direction. That's why I'm asking.
So there are examples where you could have like, for example, if you take AES return like coordinates plus r squared dx plus square term. This is a solution of the Einstein's equation with the negative cosmological constant. It's a nice solution, but if you reduce along the x plus direction, you produce a singularity at r equals infinity or whatever. So it's not actually a physical singularity, but it's just an artifact of reducing along the direction with the coordinate singularity.
But is your higher dimensional solution asymptotically nice?
Yeah, it's nice everywhere. There's no curvature singularity, there's no conical singularity.
Okay.
The question is whether that special z equals 2 or something more
generic. Yeah, most of these are for z equals 2.
Have these tidal forces a holographic meaning for the field theory?
Good. So this is something I'd like to understand. I don't know. I can't think of a sharp probe that would really show a direct holographic interpretation.
You want to dangle the string very close to the singularity and just pull it back up again.
Yeah. Right. So I think that there's stuff to be that you can imagine doing here. Like I think there's this interesting question. It's like, yeah, dangle the string close and it's being stretched apart or squeezed or something like that. So yeah. So I think it's possible to imagine the things that you could probe this with. And it'd be very interesting to do this, I think, and see whether this really causes some signature or not. Okay? So this is a problem of all of it.
Let me ask a good bad question to the condensed matter theorists, because it seems like we're debating whether z equals infinity or finite z is more natural here.
Yeah.
They have a lot of experiments. They actually see quantum critical points in some approximation. they probably have some range of z's they see. My guess is they see different values of z and no particular outcome is favored, but is there a comment about this? I mean, for us to debate it abstractly seems silly when we have lots of data. What are we trying to explain, finite z or infinite z?
Yeah.
For different features, can have different z's. Right?
Sure.
But z is equal to 1 is very simple, right? You have all kind of z. Suppose you take x time model. In those Bosonic systems, you see at least z. So infinite z would have z is equal to 1. So it's not.
I mean, your guess might be that there should be different universality classes with different z. Right. We shouldn't actually have, you know, some kind of universal answer like it's all z.
It's depending on the field theory.
But I
think the question was about experiments. Yeah. And I don't really know many experiments, or any actual experiments that measure the.
Yeah. Well, I'm longer than you have been, and I think there has been a kind of consensus view that in Couplet superconductor, Z tends to be 1, and it's mostly based on the magnetic fluctuations, but they get really dynamical information via intrinsic neutron scattering. And then there's this sort of fault-tolerant heavy fermion systems, where I am not really sure whether the Z's that are coded there are given in by theoretical packages, or whether they are really nailed down by good measurements. So when you do these Westminster theories, then you get a Z2 for antiferromagnetism and Z3 for ferromagnetism, and it seems to be there in the data, but I could never really convince myself that it was really measured and not sort of put in by N before the measurement. So I like to be confused about it.
Aren't there materials which fit Hauschmidt's standard theory in certain materials at least? Then we know that it's Z.
Yeah, but nobody's wrong there, right? Because as two keeps getting the temperature, you don't know Z. So in some material, that's confirmed Z equals 2 and equals 3.
I think the only good way to really measure it is when you have dynamic information, right? You can measure along the energy axis, the frequency axis, and you can measure along the momentum axis. And the only thing doing that really in a good way is neutron scattering.
And I think our spin system, forget about those metals, then there are many materials where we know what is Z. Like there's transfer field Ising model, there's material which directly does that, so it has this good one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are insulating materials.
Yeah, I'm saying if I don't have all that.
If there are no fermions, then you know that CS1 is preferred.
Hong Liu mentioned one material with cerium, copper, and gold, where it's claimed that localized criticality was seen. Is the entropy known there? Is that big?
I think it's zero, yeah. But it's again kind of a neutral scattering, right? Yeah.
He just mentioned that there was one possible example.
Okay, good. So that summarizes half of these. There are two ways that I was talking about throwing charge. That's one of them. It's basically putting it behind some sort of horizon where you don't have explicit charge carriers in the bulk. Okay, you're hiding the charge, whatever's carrying the charge, behind the horizon. Okay. So now there's a different way to do it. Basically what Diego will be discussing. Let me just briefly mention it now. Maybe you don't want to hide the charge behind the horizon, but actually have it physically in the bulk. Okay. So imagine having charge carriers like fermions, say, actually sitting in the bulk, creating some distribution that has some radial profile, etc., etc. So they really carry the charge. Okay, they really carry the charge, and you can see them in the bulk. Okay, this is the other way. Have bulk carriers. Okay, and this is this thing called the electron starch. It's been studied by people in this room, Sean, Diego, collaborators. So we can begin to do a quick good bad thing about this as well. Okay. So the infrared geometry here is Lipschitz. Okay? So the entropy at your temperature is zero. And what's also nice is that you can really see what's carrying the charge. You can see that there are fermions. It doesn't have the sort of mysterious universality of the black hole. You can really see there are actually fermions that are carrying the charge. So let's see. see the charge. Okay? But the problem with these tidal forces still remains.
So by the way, this didn't actually need to be fermions, just heavy charged things.
Very good, yeah. So you could have heavy charged things, yeah. But you sort of think that at the end of the day, though, those heavy things will be quantum mechanical, correct? At the end of some day. And so ultimately, I think this is in sort of the same universality class as that, I think. Right? What do people feel that this is
if you just, they don't have to be fermions.
You know, well, if they're once they become quantum mechanical, if they're bosons, it'll be very hard to stop them from condensing. Right?
What if they're massive? I don't understand.
If they're massive, again, it's a good. So that'll depend on
both bosons all go in the grounds. I mean, either they have a coherent phase or they won't. And I think fermions are prevented from having a coherent phase by Pauli exclusion. The bosons will have a coherent phase and they'll break the symmetry. You know? I mean,
well, if we work on the gravity side, can you dumb it down for me and tell me what you think happens to the case where they're just heavy baryons, say?
Bosonic.
Charge, but heavy.
So then we have density of them in the zero momentum state. Yeah. There'll be a finite number of quanta at zero momentum, like Bose-Einstein condensate, and the wave function will have a phase. That phase will break the U1 state. The wave function of the fermions, well, that doesn't happen because they're in different states, they're alone in the ground state, so you don't get a microscopic phase. Mm-hmm. I think the mass is independent. I mean, so you have lots of quantum in the same state.
So. Let's get a large N. If you build some charge scalar selection, that can just take both. Right? You won't break the phase once you're breaking the charge. These things can exist. I mean, like I was talking, we just made a little boom.
A charge
fluid. Right? The relative is to do this naturally. Right?
Yeah.
You can just put in some sort of.
Normally, it's a temperature, right? I mean, yeah. I think if it's zero temperature, everything's. Stupid about it. Isn't everything going to be.
Well, I mean, this is all classical. I mean, it's classical. I mean, usually in gravity,
so it's like. Right, but that's because there's normally a finite temperature, so if you're around this, the fluid is
fine. No. We're trying to avoid the horizon, because the horizon is giving us finite entropy. If your goal is simply to find some gravitational solution which has non-zero charge, that's all you're asking for, non-zero charge,
A charge scalar field has a phase of breaking symmetry, and a charge fluid is the same thing. I mean, what's the equation of state? If it's just a Bose scalar field, the equation of state is one of a Bose-Einstein condensate, which has a phase. I mean, I'm just saying, if I stop throwing boson into the star, then we're going to go into the ground state, which is zero momentum.
Well, actually, I mean, these bosons are charged, so if the density is low enough or the mass is long enough, they'll form a million crystal instead.
Yeah, that's another, they could be a crystal, yeah.
But that'll be a translation breaking ground, so I haven't seen yet. Yeah. Or maybe Yuri and David have seen it now.
It's definitely translation breaking in the first place.
Sorry, read these guys?
Yeah.
Well, because it's a bunch of particles.
Yeah. No, but if you treat them.
The ones I was asking.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah. So these states, the electron size that will be discussed soon, are not translation breaking. It's really just the Fermi C and the bulk. Yeah. So. Okay. Anyway. Good. So
can I ask two dumb questions? What fixes Z in this case?
What fixes Z? So dynamics, basically, the gauge coupling, the charge of the fermion, the mass of the fermion, various things fix it. And in some limits, you can calculate and get formulas for it, or numerical things that you solve for it.
And then the other dumb question is, what's the analog? Is there a Chandrasekhar like limit for these things? They really collapse, or is there?
So when you heat the temperature up too much, then they get favored by the black hole appears again as a fermion state. Is that analogous to the Chandrasekhar?
It is analogous.
Yeah. So it's similar, I think.
It's just temperature. Now you just crank up the central density usually, the maximum, and the mass reaches the maximum and comes down.
So here what's happening is you have a planar limit, so you've already escaped the Chandrasekhar limit, and the way you've done it is by tuning the charge and the mass of the fermions in the right way, so that the charge propulsion just keeps it apart.
Okay.
And now if you heat it up, it's like you're sort of favoring the mass over the charge, and eventually it collapses. So this, I think physically it's
So here the repulsion is predominantly electrical, it's not Fermi statistics repulsion.
I think that's probably true, yeah.
I think for large charge that read yes. needs to be.
So when you talk about Z, why is there only one Z? Aren't there many different species and kind of different? I didn't follow probably.
Right, right, good. So so the Z that we're always talking about here is there's a geometric Z, which comes from the actual scaling of the geometry, right? Which should represent, I think, the vast large N amount of the different species. That's the Z that we're always talking about. It's, I mean, certainly, like, if you have, like, some, if you break a symmetry, there'll be, like, one Goldstone mode running around some loop, and it's a relativistic looking Goldstone mode, and Z equals one. But that's not the Z we're talking about. That's just one mode, and we're talking about the large N Z. Good. Okay, good. So this is the other big way to do this, okay, to create an electron star. And this has a Lipschitz, so it has the same title versus problem. This is sort of physically very different from having it behind the horizon. In some sense, you should imagine, or one thing you can imagine is that these are really gauge invariant charge operators that are carrying the charge in this case. Whereas in this case, somehow the charge is not carried in the same way by operators that you can see. It's hidden behind, it's gauge variant or something like that. It's hidden behind some sort of horizon. And one thing that would be fun for me to understand is how to make this more precise and understand this business about the entropy and all of that.
Okay. The tidal forces are getting bad now in the bulk.
In the deep bulk. That's it diverges as you go to arbitrarily small r. So yeah, that's all.
So now they're on the vertically wandering corrections.
So let's. I'm not sure. Likely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So
some of the real P brains actually have these diverging tidal forces, right? There's sure. But they also have running scalars.
Yes.
Which ones?
Anything
with both
ways. So all the P brains except P equals 3.
Right. Okay. If it's less than 3, you know, they run the strong coupling, more than 3 runs the weak coupling.
But you get tidal forces. You get tidal forces.
Oh yeah, all the P brain metrics are.
So what's the meaning there? I mean, clearly if you heat it up, that goes away. But if you don't heat it up, what is the meaning of the diverging tidal force?
Well, I've always thought of that as like a electron. This is a fundamental object in the theory, which has some limits of localized object, and the fields are diverging at the location of the object.
But does that mean that the high order gravitational loops are
in principle, in the deep brain case, you have supersymmetry to control things. There's some set of results about lack of corrections.
But you also know that you exit supergravity description of this. In that around those energy scales, you say that you have some strongly coupled high dimensional description.
Okay. Yes.
You said in electron star, charge is carried by gauge neutral object, whereas in these two, charge is carried by some object that is charged on there.
That's right. That's what I understand.
Well, see if you're going to be there. Do you sharp this distinction between the two?
So good. So one thing that I want to that maybe is this is so here as Diego will talk about, you can look at the response functions and look at the Fermi surfaces that you get in this model of the fermions, and there's a lot of Fermi surfaces, and the sum of all the Fermi surface volumes gives you the total charge density. Okay, so the Leibniz kind of satisfied in these models. It's not satisfied at all here in that it's not even clear what's carrying the charge for most cases. So I think that's maybe a distinction, right, that you can make. Is that the sort of thing you're looking for? Or?
If we add some V1 charge in KV2,
yeah.
Then the mechanical potential is sufficiently high, and the confining force, confining scale, then really there's no confinement.
There's no confinement. You're saying confinement is suppressed in the right. So I'm not aware of an analog of that in this thing. It'd be interesting to think about. Yeah, are people aware?
Isn't everything you're talking about gauge neutral?
It's not clear that here the charge is carried by gauge neutral degrees of freedom, right?
One of the things that they carry by very long operators and somehow very long traces, yeah. And so you don't really know where the ends are, and so it's sort of quasi non-gauge invariant in some sense.
Would you have to be able to describe everything?
Yeah, of course, right. It's like these are string states, And the difference is that these are the type of states that are carrying the charge are different. That's all.
Yeah.
Of course, it's getting very. I mean, at the end.
Symmetry is on quark gluon plasma. So quarks, whatever, you need the whole system to make engagement band description.
Apart from extensive entropy getting suppressed in the electron state, is there a phase transition?
There is a phase. Well, see, you mean at finite, you want to go from one to the other. So at finite temperature, there's a phase transition that was studied by these guys, because as you increase the temperature, eventually the black hole solution wins, and then there's a phase transition, which is a third order phase transition. I'm not aware of a quantum phase transition. You can do it at zero temperature too? Okay. So then, yes.
Is there any order
You can add other couplings. You need some more fields, and then as you change the boundary conditions, which are like the couplings, you can sort of suck the fermions out of the black hole.
Oh, okay.
So some will get some coupling.
Okay. So
I just ask one. So.
Oh sure. Sorry, Andy. Yes.
You're claiming this is some deconfinement transition.
It's very loosely, maybe. Maybe very loosely in that.
Could you compute the Polyakov loop and just look at the expectation?
Let's think. I'm not sure that has any real. I don't think that has anything interesting across this. The deconfinement, if there is one, is really sort of in the charge sector, in that the charge is carried in some sense here by deconfined degrees of freedom, and here it's carried in some sense by confined degrees of freedom. But this is sort of very loose, and I'm not certain. I don't think that the Polyakov loop will have any interesting. I think you want a sort of charged analog of that, if anything. You want something that essentially the way the charge degrees of freedom are confined to be confined. So it'd be interesting to think of what that is, but I don't actually know anything off the top of my head. Anyone? Okay. So before turning this over to Diego, I'm just going to mention one more thing that will be different across these two states, which is if you have now a probe fermion on this background. Okay, so let me add a probe fermion. You can study its response in both of these setups, okay, the Risen-Nordström black hole and on the electron star background. So let me just mention what the result is for the Risen-Nordström black hole. This was studied by many people, I think first Sungsik, also by the science group and by the MIT group. So remember, for the charged black hole, I have in the infrared an ADS2 plus R2, and I have the UV and ADS4, which is really some flow from here to there. So if you look at the response function for a fermion, if you're computing holographically on this background, what you find is that there are special discrete values of k near which the response function looks like this. It's on zero temperature. Okay. So let me just briefly explain what everything here means. You can see there's a Fermi surface singularity at some special value Kf. Okay. There's a non-trivial self-energy here where this exponent, omega to the 2 nu, this is really coming from the ADS2 part of the geometry. It's some non-trivial thing. This number nu can be found from parameters of the bulk theory. It's some real number that characterizes this. And this basically is a non-Fermi liquid response function, okay? It's especially sharp when you find cases where nu is less than half. Because in that case, this has this number always has a real imaginary part. When nu is greater than half, then this is sort of much smaller than this, and this looks like a stable quasiparticle. The width of it is very small. When nu is smaller than half, on the other hand, you want to balance the real and imaginary parts of this to actually find the pole. It looks very different, and it's really a non-Fermi liquid. Okay, so this is really a non-Fermi liquid response function. Okay. So let me just point out one thing. Let me imagine looking at the following object. The spectral density at omega equals to zero as a function of k. All right? If I plot that, let me draw that. sphere. So this is the imaginary part of Vr, the mega equals zero is a function of k. What I get is this. Okay? There's some spikes here at some discrete values of kf. Okay, so here's like one kf, another kf. So these are these guys that I just pointed out. Okay? But this form is really good near k equals to kf. The thing looks very different than other generic parts. And what you actually see is there's a strange thing here where the spectral density at zero frequency is non-zero over a range of k's going all the way down to zero, starting from some value of k0. Okay? This feature is true for most of the parameter range where you get this interesting physics. Okay? So what is this? First of all, this is very strange, actually. This is very weird. It's non-zero at omega equals to zero, continuously non-zero for some finite range of k. So this is peculiar. Okay? This is very strange. In the bulk, it's coming from the fact that essentially we have broken the ADS2 BF bound of the spinner. This is because the charge contributes negatively to it, and there's a continuum of states in the bulk. All right, that's what causes this.
Do spinners have a BF bound?
Rather, what I mean is, if you look at computer conformal dimension, it's imaginary. So that's what happens if you break a BF bound. Yeah, I don't know whether spinners really have a BF bound, but what this means is a continuum of states in the bulk. Okay. So the way that I like to interpret this is you really should, these states should be filled, okay? And if you then take into account their back reaction on the geometry, what you will find at the end of the day is basically this, okay? So this state, the Riesz-Nordström black hole, in some sense really wants to be this state, okay? This is the 1 over n correction that I claim to lift the degeneracy, okay? So what you really want to be is back in this state. And so now I'm going to pass it to Diego.
All right. So this function or not, there were many questions about electron stars. I hope we'll get to some of them. So, right. So this is where the story starts.
Can you explain how that picture emerges from that
formula? What happens is that. So there's some guys that have new imaginary.
Well, that's not coming from that formula.
Well,
not directly, no. Not directly, yeah. That formula is good near each of the discrete Fermi circuits.
That's right.
Yeah, that's I zoomed in on that part.
That's right.
So the general formula is different from that. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's not coming from that formula.
So the general formula exists in such form?
No. You can track the small omega behavior and you can do it numerically, not in closed form.
And that continuum is a numerical
result? The continuum is actually an analytic result. You can see that from this imaginary. This new parameter there becomes imaginary. And then you can see the continuum from analytics because it's essentially a small omega fact. And you can sort of understand the small omega behavior. But the full range of omega and k, you can't.
I'll get to discuss what the continuum becomes, I guess, in the electron star. So, very good. So. So there was some reasons here, some good and bad things about the black holes in electron stars. Makes you wonder whether some other state of matter, that some other final state that you might want to consider. So I'll discuss the electron star. So as Nabil was saying, the black hole is a little bit too black. It's this universal features coming back to bite us, and we would like to study a system like this where you have a charge stored in some gauge invariant degrees of freedom. It's not clear that's what you want. I mean that's one thing you can do. I mean, there's this fractionalized fermionic state that you know might have both type of charge. Living together, and at this point, what I'm going to describe is this setup. So basically, let me start with the metric. Let me tell you what the metric is and what limit of this geometry we're studying. So the metric sort of looks something like this. And there's a gauge field that looks like this. So now there's three functions, f, and H that need to be determined. And the system, besides having a metric and an electric field, will consider the effect of the fermionic degrees of freedom. And the way we will do that is by following sort of the model of a neutron star, where you model this by a fluid. And so that means that to this we need to add some energy momentum tensor coming from matter. And you need to solve these equations consistently. Now, I'll say in a second what limit we're interested in. So for this to make sense, we need to be in a WKV-like description of the system. So, okay, so the obvious, let's get the obvious, okay, let me just write some information. So the metric, so the action is something like this. By charges. So obviously we want to be in a regime where this is true, which is just saying that we will be doing things in a supergravity regime. And here, see, this combination of the coupling constants is what's setting the scale for the chemical potential. A acts as a local chemical potential of this geometry, and I'll discuss this in a second. And when you write the equation of motion, for example, the Dirac equation in this background, this acts as a WKV coefficient. So we should think of as H-bar. So it's a coefficient that's sitting in front of the potential.
I mean, I guess it's just a semantic thing, right? From a condensed matter view, I would call this thermal Fermi, right? That you go to the high density limit of the Fermi gas, and that you really don't have to worry about, things going on at a length scale smaller than the screening length. But you basically say that screening length is much. I mean, WKV sounds to me like quantum mechanics, and this sounds, and the real thing is, of course, that you...
I'm solving a wave equation. I'm solving a wave equation in the background, and what I
want to
say
you
is
you want to build up that... Yeah, perhaps I'm confused. You want to build up that fermion matter making up a star, mm-hmm. Right?
I don't... Yeah, that's right.
And that's about high-density matter?
It'll be about, yes, having lots of particles, yeah. Having a fluid that has lots of particles. So, I mean, from
I can decide that I can also call this WKV.
This is a WKV.
So Thomas Fermi, charge per particle is very small compared to the total charge of
sorry?
The star.
Yeah.
That I can read this as Thomas Fermi more than WKV.
Sorry, what did you say?
Thomas Fermi, you try to make that blow up of fermion matter, right? You're not looking at von Fermi.
Yeah, it's the same, yeah.
It's the same, right? Yeah. If you start trying to understand why you call it WKV.
Well, the reason WKV is because when you write down the Dirac equation, you'll have some potential. And some.
So the wave functions are very localized.
That's right, the wave functions are very
localized. Yeah. Perhaps you learn more like you have a very large firm energy and the density is very high.
The conditions are the same.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I'm going to get that. So, right, So from the point of view of people who are familiar with the superconductor story, this is just the probe limit, where we're taking this electric charge to be large. So this is very large, right? So that's one thing we want to do. Now, of course, I still have to compare what these two guys are. So there's another coupling that's interesting, which we can write like this, for example. And we'll take this to be order one, and I'll explain in a second why we want this to be order one. So basically, this is just saying that the closed string coupling constant has the square of the open string coupling constant. So this is a limit that we're taking, and the reason we're taking this is because we're interested in getting away from the black hole regime and getting to a regime where the dynamical scaling, and I'll mention in a second how that appears, is of order one. One meaning not infinity. I mean, we could make it large, but yes.
So can I think of this coming from some smear band distribution where like the gauge field is like the leading
order expansion, the dBA action, and the fermions also coming from them.
Well, this is sort of the natural scaling that you'll get from open strings. I mean, this is a little bit different from the MIT scaling in the sense that this is not, we're not thinking of this as some KK mode, right, of geometry. So yes, so this is more natural and you have open strings. So very good. So we want to do this, and at the same time, one more thing that I should say. So it has to do with let me write this more detail. So when we write some equation of motion, I mean there will be some in Schrödinger form. There will be some effective equation of motion that have some potential, and of course the potential will come with terms that so inside the potential there will be terms that go. There'll be terms that go, let's say, like m squared, like this, and there'll be terms that come with this new scale. So, of course, we want these things to be of the same order. We want them to compete so that we can regulate their chemical potential to fill it up with a Fermi surface. And what this means is that the mass has to be so. Basically, it means that the so in natural units, this is of order of whenever I'll call this gamma. So M is of order gamma. So see, this is just the Compton wavelength of the particle. So once we do this, once we take this scaling, all this means is that the Compton wavelength is very small compared to the ABS radius. And then we are in a local description where we can do all that I'm about to describe. This is a limit in which we don't have to worry about curved space, and we can solve the equation for this fluid locally. And this is where this gauge field takes the role of a local chemical potential. So,
Michel, can I get back? I mean, I just want to make sure that I understand it correctly. So I my perception is like you make that water high density thermal matter in the star, and that means that your KF is pretty large, meaning that your wavelength is pretty small, right? And then you can do, in essence, what we would call a local density approximation.
Right, a large and small, yes, that's exactly correct.
Operationally exactly yes. The same thing as you are arguing.
That's
but
exactly
you somehow need the density of the star is large. If the charge per particle is very low.
That's right.
That's really
true. So what you just said is this statement. Is that, so by the way, I mean, this is just right, the dimension of the operator. So it means the dimension of the operator that we're looking at is very large. And what that means is that we can think of WKV wave function just being localized at a point. And we'll get, this is sort of an interesting way of thinking about, which I'll get to in a second.
So put the dimension on the charge scale with some power, right?
Well, and I want to, I'd rather not say N here because I'm going to be scaling things in a convenient way. But if you want to think of N coming from this, then, you know, everything scales in this way. But I'd rather, let me not say N. Let's keep it phenomenological.
And so your estimates or assumptions for E and M, does that apply that the gravitational attraction between two of your fermions is balanced by the electrostatic repulsion?
That's right.
In a real microscopic construction where you might have fermions with all values of delta condensing, what would actually end up being dominant in terms of your star? Would it be the high delta modes in your approximation, or would the low delta modes kind of dominate for that?
So, So the guys who have the most charge are these guys, right? These are the guys that do not change the geometry, right? So these are like probes, and they'll fill lots of Fermi surfaces. So in this MIT way of thinking about it, the guys with low dimension are the guys that get very few Fermi surfaces. And then as you go to very large dimension, then you start having a bunch of them. So let me having said all of this. Things. Let me get to the physics of this. So, I mean, everything that I just said is just to make you warm and fuzzy. about using WKV approximation. And it's also a regime in which we have good control over the star. Of course, it'd be nice to understand some other regimes, and actually people at Leiden have been doing such a thing. So Shamit, you ask about Z, and so from everything that you said, let me just write this before I move on. So Z, I'm gonna think of a parameter. It's an order one parameter that I can add and make it large or small. But in principle, Z depends on all the stuff that I just wrote. So it depends on if we think of, it basically depends on these parameters. So by making, so that is the dimension of the operator. Gamma is just, remember, whenever I say gamma, I mean this. You should think of gammas, 1 over h1. So by making these two guys order 1, what I manage is making z of order 1. And I'll use z as a parameter throughout. So this is what z depends on. So very good. So now, what are the physical properties of this system? So, well, I erase the metric, of course. But basically, as Nabil described, the infrared limit of the metric that you get as a solution of this system is a Lipschitz metric, and what that means is that f goes like this. Can you see from here? Yes, no? Yes. F goes like this, g goes some parameter over r squared, and h goes over r. So everything has a Lipschitz scaling. So it's the infrared value of these constants. So with all of this, we can now write potentials for our Dirac equation in this background, and we can solve it, and we can calculate, for example, the Green's function. But before I get to the Green's function, let me make a small and fast detour and say a few things about oscillations. So another way to study the system is by studying quantum oscillations. What that means is you put in some magnetic field, and then whenever we have Landau levels, then pretty much everything, any physical quantity you want to calculate will have a periodic behavior with magnetic field. So free energies and susceptibilities, for example. And by measuring that period, you can figure out the size of the Fermi surface. Just to keep emphasizing the difference between the black hole and the electron star case, it turns out that in the black hole, these oscillations are sort of non-standard. They have some funky temperature dependence. And I can talk more about that with people who are interested in. But in the electron star, you actually end up getting the standard Lipschitz-Kosevich, vanilla result. And you might find that a little bit surprising. I mean, this system is a system that has some funky z. It has some non-trivial thermodynamic quantities that are certainly non-Fermi liquid-like. But still, the oscillations come out as in a Fermi liquid. And the reason I'm mentioning all this, because this is a nice picture for you to have in your head while I discuss all the Green's functions, is that we can think of our star in the following way. So as I said, this A, you should think of as a local chemical potential. Local chemical potential. And because it's a local chemical potential, again, we just decided that the Compton wavelength was small compared to the curvature, we can analyze everything locally. It means that at some point in our geometry, we want to condense and form Fermi surfaces. Now, you can actually calculate what that is. So you locally solve this problem, and you calculate the size of a Fermi surface. And when you do that, you'll get a plot of this form. So this is a little bit funky. R equals infinity goes to here. Remember, R equals infinity is the Lipschitz horizon. So R equals 0 is the boundary. And our star looks like this. So this is sort of a plot of some effective size of Fermi surface corrected by the redshift. And what happens then is that this guy, some R star, which is close to the edge of the star, but it's not the edge of the star, gives you the largest Fermi surface. Now, if you're familiar with the way these quantum oscillations are calculated, I mean, whenever you have a system, even a three-dimensional system in momentum space, it ends up being that it's the largest Fermi surface, the one that dominates the quantum oscillations. So these are the ones that end up dominating quantum oscillations. And if you notice, this is where critical region lives. Sorry. So this is where critical region lives. And these are my like Fermi liquid like modes. So this is sort of the reason why you get Fermi liquid like physics from these quantum oscillations, while there's all this critical stuff living here. So the cartoon you should have in mind of the star, as we now discuss the Green's functions, something like this.
But then the transport is also dominated by Fermi liquid like degrees of freedom, or can it be like the MIT and Leiden models with non-Fermi?
It's a very interesting question, and as always, the low energy limit does not commute with other limits you might take. And actually, if it's interesting enough, you can get some interesting contribution. I'll discuss this in a second. But in principle, you can get some interesting transport coefficients, which is a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because you think that once you have something that sort of lives for very long, it will dominate. But we'll get to that in a second. So let me make a cartoon. So this is our star. And this is our usual ABS type pictures. And we can think of, this is a star. This is where quantum oscillations live. And this is where criticality lives. So this is what you should have in mind. So this actually takes us, so what are all these guys, right? Why are these guys dominating? As we said, in the WKV limit, the wave function is actually localized on a point in the R direction. So it's OK to think of each point in R as a different species of fermion. And each fermionic operator on this theory sort of decomposes into a lot of guys that are just labeled by some index R. And this actually takes us back to what Joe was discussing in his talk, was it last week? Last week, I think, about how to interpret the radial direction in holography. And here, at least in this case, a sort of natural interpretation, as these guys have different bound states, you can think of this as some orbits in the hydrogen atom, for example, and there are all these guys that correspond to different bound states. If you think of, let's say, these operators being some trays, let's say, or something like this, then there's some bound states and they have different sizes, and there will be some guys that are very stable. Those are the Fermi liquid-like modes that live sort of here. And there will be some other guys that sort of, you know, the modes are sort of very close to the continuum of the hydrogen atom, the ones that wanna have large overlap with the free particles, and those ones are sort of connected with these ones.
So in Randall's syndrome, if you localize fermions in bulk, people would say the guys towards the UV are elementary fermions external to the CFT, and the ones in the deep IR are composites. Is there some sense in which these things are composite when they're very close to the horizon?
So what's funny about the WKV limit, I'll get to the potentials in a second, but if you have a potential, you have the guys at the bottom of the potential that live here, so these are well localized and they live here, but what about these guys, right, the guys that are sort of further up? They sort of live at both sides. So it's not clear what you mean by deep. I mean, what I mean is that the same guys that are very deep in here are the same guys that are close to the edge. So what that means is that the guys that are sort of very they're very loosely bound are the guys that are closer to the horizon, but also the guys that are closer to the edge. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I mean it's a little bit. Confusing, I think, the other thing to say that way. So, having said all of this, hopefully this got you a mental picture of what the system is about. Let me just talk about the Green's function a little bit and the potentials that you get.
Diego, question. In the ADS2 case, if you calculate quantum oscillations, what is the period in 1 over b that you get?
You'll get the scale is given by mu, and you'll get the Fermi surface as.
So it's like one large Fermi surface, or how does it?
Yes, I mean, there's Nabilis agrees.
It's a bit subtle, right? Because here your charge is really carried by those fermions. So when you compute the quantum oscillation, you're looking at delta from those fermions. Whereas in the ADS2 case, it's not carried by those. It's carried by this black hole. And if you, there's no oscillations at leading order in 1 over n.
because it's just a smooth black.
It's a one-loop calculation. You can do it, but it's a one-loop calculation, yeah. Which amounts to sort of filling whatever you have. Right? So if you calculate the free energy, you'll get some boring result, a leading order in N. You'll find nothing. And then there's some interesting contributions that's a leading order. And those guys will have, the period of oscillation is just set by the chemical potential scale.
But those do not come from explicitly putting in some fermions or...
It's a one-loop result.
I mean, I think the fermions are there in the black hole.
They're there, but...
They haven't been back-reacted.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're wave function. There's still a filled fermi surface outside the star. It's just that you haven't gravitated it. So I think in some sense, I don't really know what it means. I mean, you should back-react the fermions and then you...
It's a one-over-n effect. I mean, it's...
Well, I'm saying it's a little tricky because if you back-react the fermions, you kill the black hole.
Yeah.
And if you... Right. And if there's no KF to back-react, then there are no quantum oscillations and there are no fermi surfaces, even in AMIT sense. So it's a bit confusing how you're meant to think about it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you can, in principle, separate those isolated fermi surfaces from the continuum inside. Right? You can treat them, you can compute their contributions separately. So the isolated ones outside, they give you an interesting scaling, the amplitude, but the period is just set by the Fermi volume of each isolated Fermi surface.
And those are those
spikes that are outside the other thing. But the continuum is just very confusing. And I think to treat the continuum correctly, you should just do what Diego's doing, and you end up with this thing. And then,
Actually, let me just check. So we would say that in the black hole case, there's a small amount of the charge is in fact carried by fermions outside the
That's
black
right.
hole.
Yeah, that's right. Some small amounts.
And it's their contribution, but it's a small fraction of the total charge that's oscillating.
I see, but this continuum presumably is a problem physical because you have excitations at zero frequency and temperature.
Yeah, that's right. So those are weird and those will be fixed by him. So that continuum implosion does not treat very seriously. It means that probably that is not the right thing. Yeah.
What's interesting about the oscillations in the black hole case is that the temperature dependence is not the Lifshitz-Kostelich one.
The temperature dependence coming from these spikes, or?
Yeah.
So the temperature dependence will not be what you get from the Lifshitz-Kostelich formula. But
this picture is a result of the standard KB approximation.
This will give you a continuum of Fermi surfaces, yes.
In the standard KB.
In the gamma going to infinity limit, really. I'll resolve this in a second when I discuss it in time.
Gamma is finite, it's roundable.
When gamma is finite, large or finite, I mean, I'm going to semi-classically quantize this and get a discrete of conditions. So, very good. So that's where we're heading. Very good. So we want to do that now. We have this continuum Fermi surfaces, and we want to resolve that and make it into a discrete set, and we can calculate the charges and calculate Green's functions, and check, for example, the Luttinger count. So let me start with, I mean, everything comes from the potential, so I'll make cartoons of the potential. So the potential, so once you put the Dirac equation in Schrodinger form, the potential just looks like this. So it's, of course, I erase the metric again, but it looks like this. So it looks like this. Now, everything that has a hat in it just has been rescaled by the WKV parameter. So something with hat equals gamma and something, and which is what you would do in the WKV limit. And G, H, and F are the functions on the metric that I erased already twice. So this is a complicated potential that you get from a numerical solution, and you can deal with that, but for you to have a feeling of what it is, I mean, you can write this in the Lifshitz region, and there's actually a limit, which I'll discuss in a second, which lets you push the whole star into the Lifshitz region. So actually, writing the potential in the Lifshitz region is not insufficient. I mean, some limit you can get far with that. But let me just write it. So as I was saying, then this is just a number, and the potential looks like this. Again, number. So this is, again, the potential that you have in your mind. So this is a dynamical scaling, and this is what this looks like. So let me make a picture of this. So let's start nice and easy. Let's start at omega equals 0, which is anyway, what we want to look at if we want to study the Fermi surfaces. So we can draw this potential. And the potential looks like this, where this height is given by k squared. So what we see here, so this is omega equals zero. What we see here is that if we're solving this problem in WKV, we'll semi-classically quantize these orbits, and we'll find solutions whenever the Sommerfeld-Bohr integral gives you some collection of integers. So basically something like this. Potential. And from this equation, you should obtain KFN. So these are where the singularities live. There will be singularities whenever k hits one of those values. Now, this one is the largest kf, and that's when you hit the bottom of this potential. So this picture is for k less than the kf max, if you will. The maximum one will be when you tune k such that the potential looks like this. So this will give you kf max. So as you can see, if you have k less than kf, there will be a collection of singularities in Green's function given by this modes of the geometry. You'll hit a maximum one when k hits kf max, and then if you make k larger than kf max, you'll just run out of energy. So armed with this, you can actually show that the Lattinger count is obeyed in this geometry. So basically, the Lattinger theorem says basically that the charge is something like the sum of some volumes of Fermi surfaces, some number, that's a matter. And this is just the sum of Kfn squared. So basically, this is the content of the Lattinger theorem, says that this, all the charge comes from these Fermi surfaces. And actually, you can show this in this plot geometry, because this is sort of an implicit definition of what the Kfn's are, and you can plug it in here, and you can do that. And if you do that, you'll see that the thing ends up being something like this. Kfn of Kf of R. And see, we turned a sum over Fermi surface that had a Kf square into something that has a Kf cube. This comes from just solving for Kfn and plugging back in. So by doing this now, this is obviously the total charge in the star, because this is how you define the charge in the bottom, which is summing over the Kf cubes. Remember, it's just one more dimension in the bottom. So you can actually show that the Lattinger count is obeyed in the systems. Now, let me. Are there questions here? Oh, sorry. I'll try to finish it fast so we can discuss some of these things. Very good. So what happens to finite omega? So now this is where it gets interesting. So finite omega, the potential changes, and it looks like this. Now, this is what you might have expected. When you put in something that has energy, it wants to go through the horizon. There will be a Lipschitz horizon, and this wants to fall through the horizon. So here there are three regimes. One in which you hit nothing, so case one is something like this. So here there's nothing. It's a table. And there's a second regime in which you have things like the one I drew before, and you have stable states that can live there. And then there's a third regime where things become stable, unstable again, which is something like this. Now, the interesting states, which are the ones you were asking about in transports, the one that have to do with criticality, are states that live very close to here, when you tune the top of the potential to be very close to the zero of energy. Now, these states are very stable. They're actually exponentially stable, and actually this was discussed by Joe and Tom in a paper of theirs before we did this calculation. But these guys are not. even though these guys need a ton of Fourier barrier to decay, so they're exponentially stable, these guys actually are very close to the top of an inverted harmonic oscillator potential, and they can decay fairly easily.
You don't believe that exponential stability is stable to small corrections, or you do?
Sorry?
What's the lifetime?
Whenever you have some interaction, of course you'll get some Fermi liquid like type of, you get some omega squared, let's say. So, very good. So the question is, what's the Green's function that comes from this? Let me make the following plot of it. So I'm going to show the following. So let's have omega here and k here. There's one line like this, and there's another line like this.
Omega zero is the Fermi energy you were.
Sorry?
And omega zero is the Fermi energy.
So, well.
Yeah, where your K line ends is.
So there are poles like look like this. So these are the poles that we described. These are this sort of Taylor guys. This is region one. This is region three. This one's, and this is the intermediate region. Now these guys are sort of boring Fermi liquid type poles that give you the quantum oscillations. But
there is finite self energy when you go away from the Fermi energy.
What's your question?
Right, so you have k and omega.
These guys are very stable.
Yeah, but there should be self energy. They cannot be infinitely long there.
Again, you need to add interactions to see that.
Interactions to the...
They're exponentially long-lived if you don't have any other interactions.
But the interactions are in the block.
Exponentially in one over frequency?
Exponentially in... exponentially in some... Yes, omega to some power of z.
It's because I need to tunnel through that.
And you tunnel through this thing. Mm-hmm.
So their lifetime against dissipation is on the vertical sector. It's fully into the horizon.
But it's a frequency dependent thing, it's not.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, at zero frequency, they are stable.
Yeah, just to get it straight, right? So I can play the Fermi liquid phenomenologist. And then you can also show me things that are physical. And in the Fermi liquid, it cannot be that quasi particles are infinitely long lived, right? So it should be universally that when you go away from EF, that the lifetime or the inverse lifetime should go like energy squared. Okay.
You need to, if you have interactions, you'll see that happen.
This will be like e to the 1 over omega plus one over n times omega squared, right?
That's right.
There's an order of limits.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
When I think philologically about it, the prefect of the omega squared is set by what? You say interactions in the bulk.
Yeah. That's right.
And you can translate that in a Fermi liquid language.
It's like adding interactions outside this critical section.
Okay.
So just kind of a Fermi liquid in the bulk. Is that what you're?
That's right. These guys are really a Fermi liquid in the bulk. These guys are like free Fermions in the bulk.
And it's a. D-dimensional Fermi liquid in the bulk, where D is just the dimensions of the.
It includes the extra dimension, right? They can also move like this. Right?
Does the dimension of the Fermi liquid now include the radial direction?
But we're in the limit, of course, when you're localizing this. I'm doing it locally, of course. If you're doing, I mean, locally, this is true.
Because, I mean, there is a difference between, say, a three-dimensional Fermi liquid and a two-dimensional Fermi liquid.
Of course.
So what kind of a Fermi liquid is
it? This is an artifact of the WKB approximation.
That it looks three.
That's right. That the extra dimension looks the same as the other two. Mm-hmm. You want to say that? Mm-hmm. So these interesting guys that live very close to the critical are the guys that are very close to this line. So this line is omega goes like k to the z.
I'm actually a little confused by your answer to this question. Are you saying the radial direction is why you have a large number of different Fermi surfaces, or are you saying each Fermi surface behaves like a higher dimensional Fermi liquid?
locally, each Fermi surface becomes like a higher dimensional Fermi surface.
Locally in what?
Locally in the bulk, at a given.
Yeah.
Well, the extra dimension is given by all this collection of that.
Right? So really, the radial direction is just turning to the large number of Fermi surfaces.
Yes, that's right.
But they're each behaving like a normal Fermi orbit.
That's right.
In D minus one. In D minus one energy.
That's right. So, okay, so let me not bore you with more plus of poles. I want to get to discuss some things. So.
Just to get the plot back. So we have an omega going like K to the C line, and above that you have area 3, which is interesting and critical, but it's always at finite energy. Is that correct?
Because well, at zero energy,
EF is right at the point where omega going like KC starts.
Yeah, so the finite energy determines the decay rate.
Yeah.
So, very good. So another question is, of course, because you have these interesting scalings, you can get some things at low energy. And actually, there's some interesting feature of this that I haven't discussed yet, is that, again, because the guys that are sort of the critical guys are the ones that are, let me draw it here, sort of oscillating, are oscillating like this. These ones are closer to the boundary of, let's say, the ADF boundary than these ones that live here. So it's actually easier to tunnel into these guys from the boundary than to tunnel into the skies. It's saying that the overlap with the operator at the boundary is larger from this guy than from this one. And what that means is that the residue of these poles, even though they have these very small Fermi surfaces, is exponentially enhanced with respect to this one because they have to tunnel less. So it's sort of a complicated situation in which even though you have these guys that are very short-lived, and you might think they're not very important, on the other hand, these have this interesting C scaling, so they can dominate at low energies. And furthermore, most of the spectral weight is really concentrated on those guys. So there's room for interesting physics. Now, of course, all of the interesting physics that you'll get depend on this Lipschitz region at the end. And so this sort of takes us back to where this talk started and where Nabil's comment is what's the fate of this Lipschitz region.
Here you don't have the running scalar, so it might just be stable.
That's right. That's right. Now, you still have the singularity. You still have the Lipschitz horizon. And I have to say, I always find myself confused when I get questions about this. On the one hand, you know, it's we know of other singularities in string theory that are okay. I mean, like, you know, AP wave type singularities. I mean, there are some things that are okay. I mean, put it differently. Maybe it's related to this comment, right? If you can find a limit where you can take some smooth configuration and take it into a singular limit, then that's okay. It's just an artifact of the limit you take. It's very similar to grabbing a black hole and just boosting it. Right? When you do that, you'll get some singularity. That singularity is physical. So, I mean, that's one thing you can say about this Lipschitz horizon. On the other hand, it's not clear what it means. And I think that one of the reasons we're confused is I think that we're also confused about this even in field theory. Maybe some of the experts can chime in here, but as far as I know, I don't know if there's any example that's under control where you have a theory with non-trivial C scaling. And that exists in field theory. It's not the same as having our usual C equals 1, for example.
There's certainly free examples, but I think...
Free examples, yes.
There are even interacting examples in 3 plus 1 dimensions with fermions. Even the people at TIFR, Mandel and Vadia, have been writing down examples.
So you start with a theory, so what's the free theory you perturb about? Is this a perturbative?
Perturbative treat, I don't remember the details. But I mean, the UV behavior is better at large Z. So you're worried about IR issues in the field theory? Large Z actually makes UV properties much better in field theory, right? It's more.
That's right. I'm just worried about lack of examples, about the fact that we don't understand really what it means to have a fixed. I don't understand what fixed point at non-trivial Z means. I mean, in a way, I mean it's not said differently. Let's say you make you do an experiment and you measure some Z that's whatever 4.8 whatever. Is that really the result of the extreme low energy physics, or is it that it's an intermediate regime? And we don't know really what's at the end of this, right? Maybe it's acceptable to have something that behaves with some non-trivial Z all the way to the end, or maybe it's just not. Maybe maybe needs to go back to ABS, or I don't know. So I feel that the fact that we don't understand the extreme IR physics of this geometry is a little bit connected with the fact that I don't think in field theory we really understand what's supposed to lie at the extreme IR of this of these theories. But I would like to hear comments about this. And
wasn't there a control example where you had one or two more flavors and Z was close to 2 or something?
Yes, yes. Is that a totally controlled
theory with a boundary? Well, the starting with a theory which is non-local, that's a bit of a problem.
Okay.
And Z in this in that theory is actually a fixed. It's not dynamical because you're starting with a non-local, right. Non-local interaction. So Z in that theory is just 2 plus epsilon. But I mean, there are certainly honest to God theories with z equal to 2, right?
Z equals 2 might be okay. Now, z equals 2,
right?
Of course. Z equals 2
and non-relativistic.
Z equals to 2, I'm fine with. I mean, but can you find z equals pi? I don't know. I mean, yeah. No, z equals 2.
You're asking with traditional field theory methods? Because there are top-down ABS CFTs.
No, I.
That you're asking about.
Yeah, we're sure that because you can do a one-loop calculation and something that's maybe not even under control and find some correction to Z. But the question is, what's the endpoint of this story, and whether all these theories really have something else lying in the extreme IR, or whether they actually are Lipschitz all the way to the IR. And we're sort of trying to model something, but we need to ask these questions first to condense my theories in a way, right? It's hard to know what you're aiming for if we don't know what to model.
People have certainly claimed to construct a normalizable finite Z theory, so I mean.
And there's also a continuum of papers by Anselmi and Friedman and others starting in the late 90s that gave. That gave lots of examples. I just didn't read the papers.
I mean, so I think Subir has a few arguments. Some theories need to have some. But even though beta seems like zero, there's some. If you crank up the coupling high enough, you need to run into some fixed point that has some non-trivial C. There are arguments like this, but as far as I'm concerned, away from of course a free theory, I don't know of any theory where I know okay this is. This is my harmonic oscillator that I can trust and expand around. So I don't know from the point of view of the RG, right? Whether this is the status of this story is the same as the usual thing that we discussed when we have a fixed point that we can trust and we know go somewhere and I can trust that theory exists. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm confused about that. More comments or. Questions, complaints about these limits. I mean, of course, this is WKV sort of something where you can manage things. I mean, it'd be of course nice to understand to solve the Dirac equation the proper way, right? I've shown in other things sometimes. Try to.
I mean, I'm actually more concerned about very basic features like, is it now consensus what the meaning is of these order n Fermi surfaces?
Is it order n?
You're right, it was always the core n square.
It's a lot of them, yeah. I mean, in the WKV limit, yeah, this is many.
And are you of different opinions about it? Like, it's more like mesons, or perhaps it's just people find quarks? And I'm myself agnostic. Is this now settled? That comes from?
Comments? The way I think about this is as different bound states of this system, right? Of this operators, but
So the gravitational side is clear where it's coming from, but you just know that you're dealing with some large N-gang Hill theory at a finite kind of potential, and then it's perhaps not completely obvious why you find all these Fermi surfaces, right? With this sort of well-defined limit, I would think. And what's the identity of all these different fermions?
We don't have any,
In ADS, the radial motion is like a breather mode of some composite particle, and just it's characteristic of ADS that you get these finely spaced, you know, modes of this breather of the and you're populating all of these.
Joe, how would you call it in the field theory? You just started the field theory.
That's right. From the field theory, radial motion is a breather mode. It's a mode that's getting bigger and smaller.
Yeah.
But it's just characteristic ADS that you get a lot. If you look at QCD. Yeah. You're going to find these in ADS QCD, you're going to find these states in there, and they're the lying, and there may be corresponding hadronic states, but they're not sort of familiar ones.
There are people also argue that they might be quark, if it's all deconfining and...
No, you can measure this. You can measure the charge by gauge invariant operator. So the degrees of freedom are confined.
They are composite fermions, though, right? I mean, they are composites, and so the fact they have larger internal states is, possible. It's.
I mean, so could this happen at finite n?
Right.
That you have all. I think the quant question is really whether the n squared, the fundamental fermions are somehow indirectly behind all these poles. But I agree we should wind up.
All right.